And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today, and I hope your day is going well. You know, you may think, how can he really say that given some of the news that we read about? But look, we have to rise above all of that. You know, we really do. We just have to rise above the craziness. Of course, I'm going to talk about Kenosha, Wisconsin. But, you know, I keep coming back to that old song, "This Joy I Have, the World Didn't Give It, and the World Can't Take It Away." And I think we just have to absolutely refuse to let the stuff that happens stop our joy and stop our peace. Because after all, we have a peace, the Word of God says, that passes all understanding through Jesus Christ. In other words, it's unfathomable. It's a mystery. The world can't possibly understand it. We understand it in the sense that we know where it comes from. It doesn't come from us. It comes from Him. He puts it in us. And it's like deep waters. You know, even when the surface seems to be stirred, underneath it's still. And so just be at peace and don't let anything that's going on steal your joy. Now, of course, two people killed last night in Kenosha, Wisconsin, as a result of the incident of Jacob Blake's shooting by a police officer while they were in some kind of confrontation with him. But of course, look, here again, if the call is for justice, if the call is to do what is right, why is it that in the aftermath of these things, you end up with more people dead? And folks, I'll tell you something. This is really the first thing I want to say about this, and this is another reason why we have to keep our joy and keep our peace, because we are engaged in a pitched spiritual battle. You know, this is really a battle between the Lord and the forces of darkness, Satan and his demons. This is really a battle between good and evil. This is really a battle between the power of heaven and the power of hell. It really is. When you come right down to it, that is exactly what we are dealing with here. And whether you're talking about the riots in Kenosha, whether you're talking about the political campaign that will be decided on November 3rd, where you're talking about COVID-19, it is all a spiritual battle. It is all part of the same thread. You've got forces that have been stirred up by Satan that hate this country, hate everything it stands for, hate many of our people, particularly those of us who may not agree with them, of course, regardless of the color of your skin. That's just the veneer. This is really a battle of ideas. It really is. The left wants to make it racial, but it's really a battle of ideas. And the COVID-19 situation, where there seems to be a concerted effort, particularly in these very liberal states, to close up churches and persecute pastors and put people in prison and exact fines against not only the churches and the pastors, but in some cases even their members who dare attend. Threats to bulldoze buildings, to close churches and synagogues permanently. We are in a spiritual battle. Let there be no mistake about it. So we've got to keep our peace and we've got to keep our joy. Because the word also says the joy of the Lord is our strength. So don't let anybody take that away from you, okay? Don't let anybody take your peace away from you. Now, on this whole Kenosha situation, there's some good and bad things coming out of this. I heard the pastor, not of Jacob Blake, but of his mother and I think his aunt, speak at the press conference. And I was impressed by the pastor because the pastor said, we don't have a skin problem, we have a sin problem. Sounds like something I've heard somewhere else. It's not the skin, it's the sin. And he made that comment and then prayed for unity in the nation. And then apparently Jacob Blake's mother said the same thing. She said, we don't want the violence. We don't want the riots. You know, we want there to be peace. Obviously, she's distraught that her son has been killed. And I understand that. And I don't look to a person's parent in a situation like this to try to look at it objectively or take a step back and see the situation in a more holistic way. Because after all, it's the loss of a child. And so, you expect somehow, some way that whoever is responsible for the death of my child is wrong. That may or may not be the case. I heard Trey Gowdy say on Fox today that it looked like a bad shoot to him. Well, let me just say for the record, it looks like a good shoot to me. Now, I could be wrong. And of course, he could be wrong. We don't know. I'm not prejudging it. I'm just saying what it looked like. And the only reason why I say that is that he was resisting arrest. He had tussled with the police. He was resisting arrest. They were trying to get him to yield, and he kept moving toward his car. And when the car door opened, to me, it appeared that he was reaching into the car, not trying to get into the car to get away, but reaching into the car because he went into the car head first. And that's not how people enter an automobile. People, when they enter an automobile, they put their foot in first, and then the rest of the body follows, and their heads, generally speaking, remain upright. Their buttocks hit the seat, and that's how their head goes into the car. He didn't do that. He tucked his head and bent over like he was reaching for something. Now, I've heard that he was reaching for a knife. I've heard rumors that there might have been a gun in the car, that he was known to carry guns in his car. And here again, we don't know the facts yet. I'm just telling you what's been rumored. So to me, it looked like a good shoot in the sense that if he's reaching for a weapon, a police officer has got to respond immediately. And if a person is reaching for a weapon that's capable of inflicting deadly force, you respond with deadly force. And now, fortunately, Jacob Blake lived. So sort of in my mind, I keep forgetting that. I mean, he was shot seven times, but so far he's alive, but he may be paralyzed because one of those bullets apparently entered his spinal cord. So we don't really know yet. It's the situation is going to have to be litigated and investigated and all of that. But I will add this to it. Two other quick things. And then I want to talk a little bit about the convention last night, which I think was just, wow, just amazing. One is that at some point, we're going to have to realize that we cannot fire and certainly prosecute police officers because we disagree with their judgment in a potentially life or death situation. We just can't do it. I think we've got to leave police officers the latitude to say, in a life or death situation where you must make a split decision, we may not agree with the decision that you've made, but if it was reasonable under the circumstances or other reasonable people could have made the same decision, then we're simply going to have to accept it because it's part of the dangerous nature of the job. But if you put police officers in fear of losing their freedom, not let alone their jobs, every time they make a bad judgment or a judgment that people don't like, back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson. 6 months into the pandemic, Americans still misperceive their risk of death from COVID-19. This is one of the conclusions from an extensive survey by Franklin Templeton in conjunction with Gallup. They also found that the misperception is greater for people who identify as Democrats and also for people who rely more on social media for their information. Americans generally underestimate the likelihood of a person age 55 or older dying from the coronavirus. They assume about half have died of COVID-19 when the actual percentage is more like 9 in 10. For the other age cohorts, they tend to overestimate the likelihood of a person dying. They assume that people age 44 and younger account for about 30% of the total deaths, while the actual figure is 2.7%, and they estimate the risk of death from COVID-19 for people age 24 and younger to be about 8%, when the actual figure is 0.2%. The report also explains that this misperception translates into a degree of fear for one's health that for most people vastly exceeds the actual risk. For example, more than a majority of young people worry about the serious health effects from the coronavirus, yet their percentage of total deaths is only 0.1%. Partisanship and social media also have an influence. Those who identify as Democrats tend to mistakenly overstate the risk of death from COVID-19 for younger people, much more than Republicans. Also, the survey found that people who get their information predominantly from social media have the most erroneous and distorted perception of risk. This survey not only illustrates the mistaken ideas that many Americans have about the coronavirus, but also highlights how the media and politicized statements by candidates skew our view of the pandemic. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Loneliness, go to viewpoints.info/loneliness. That's viewpoints.info/loneliness.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have. And start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Brian Fisher here. Is Donald Trump the first president to use the White House as a backdrop for political purposes? Trump refutes the lie that conservatives despise immigrants. The first black AG of Kentucky proves free black Americans are finding their way to conservatism. And Nick Sandman proves you can take on the talking snake media and win. Next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Folks, yes, please don't forget the podcast. Just go to AFR.net and click on The Awakening or any other program that you want to listen to. Because some of these programs are really, from my perspective, very, very memorable, and not because of my hosting. That's not what I'm getting at. But because of the calls that you all make, some of the guests that we have, sometimes very significant things happen on this radio program. I'd love to think that every day something significant happens, but there are times that are special. And you can get those and share those with others and refer others to those programs when you feel that way. But getting back to the point, so you can't put officers in fear of losing not only their jobs but their lives because somebody second-guessed their judgment in a life or death split-second decision. What can you do? Well, you can require more training if you think, okay, the person made a judgment that was reasonable, but we think they could have made a better judgment. And we want to train them to think differently in these situations or to respond differently in these situations. But you don't put them in jail. You don't prosecute them for that. The only thing that should cause the prosecution of a police officer is they're intentionally setting out to do unlawful harm to a citizen or perhaps even there might be some liability if they've if can be proved that they act in acted in reckless disregard of human life. In other words, they just did something to somebody that they did just was not justified, and that they knew could result in serious harm to an individual, and that kind of thing. I mean, to me, those are the only two standards by which a police officer ought to get into any kind of legal jeopardy, because otherwise nobody's going to want to do this job. I think we're going to find fewer and fewer people interested in putting themselves at that risk. But here's the second thing I wanted to say about it, is we've already got two dead people now, beyond two dead people. Jacob Blake is not dead, but we now have two dead people, okay? At what point is there going to be a willingness on the part of others aside from me and maybe a handful of others? Frankly, I haven't heard this from anyone else so far. I haven't heard it from a single pundit. And by the way, when you all start calling, if you have, please tell me, because I want to know, are there others echoing this sentiment? At what point are we going to say, while we don't sanction or countenance or approve misbehavior on the part of police officers of any kind, we urge all people who deal with police to show them proper respect and cooperation and compliance with their orders. And this idea of they're ignoring the fact that Jacob Blake was asked repeatedly to stop, and apparently they wanted to handcuff him or something, but they were pulling on his shirt, trying to get him to stop, to turn around, to come back, and he refused. He kept moving. Now, at what point are we going to say, when you set about to resist the police, when you set about to fight them, when you set about to refuse to adhere to their instructions, you are asking for trouble? And the trouble you find yourself in may not be justified for the level of seriousness of the circumstance, but it could easily escalate when you start resisting and fighting cops. Now, why aren't more people saying that? Because we know that in many instances, these situations where police end up having to use their firearm are the result of people who decide that they're going to fight the police. If Jacob Blake had said, "Oh, okay, fine. What do you want to do? You want to arrest me? Or okay, fine." We wouldn't even be talking about this. But nobody wants to say that that should be the norm, that that should be expected, that that's what everyone should do. I guess that's racist to say that, because if you say that, you're implying that he deserved to be shot. No, they're two separate issues. They're two separate issues. But I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? And if you comply with the police, if you obey their instructions, if you show them the proper respect for the badge and the authority that we as a society have given them, the likelihood of you running into serious problems with the police drops to virtually zero. And of course, the police have been called there. Now we're hearing that the police have been called there because some woman was reporting him for trespassing on her property. So it's unclear what the call was all about now, because initially I was hearing that he was trying to break up a dispute between two women. Now I'm hearing that one woman called the police on him specifically. We know that he got into some kind of tussle with the police, and we know that he was resisting their efforts to corral him or to get him to yield to them and to, I guess, I don't know whether they wanted to handcuff him or whether they wanted him to just be still so that they could search him. I'm not sure what they wanted, but they were trying to get him to be still and to stand and to basically yield to their commands, and he simply wasn't doing it. So those two facts we know. What happened before, I think, is still a little bit muddy, And unfortunately, this young man is now in the hospital and may be paralyzed for life, although there's some hope apparently that he might walk again. But the other thing I wanted to bring up on this is, and by the way, the whoever shot and killed two people, this person is at large. And see, this is what this stuff produces, this jumping to conclusions, and everybody's all angry and worked up. And the criminal class, this is just open season for them. Now they get an opportunity to kill people and do it in the middle of a maelstrom, and nobody can really identify who it is because there's so much chaos going on. How in the world people think that this is supposed to improve anything is beyond me. It really is. And maybe they don't think it will improve anything. Maybe they don't care about that. Maybe they just care about using the opportunity to their advantage. Maybe that's all this is about. Here's something that really troubled me. The attorney for the family of Jacob Blake, Ivory Lamar, and he appears in a number of these kinds of cases, said this. Well, remember I said at the top of the program, this is a spiritual battle. He said this. He's quote, at their press conference, "Heaven is full to its capacity with victims that have been taken at the hands of law enforcement. And that's probably one of the reasons why Jacob lives today." Yeah, you heard that right. That's a quote. Well, first of all, it's completely asinine. I mean, it's just so, just folks, forgive me if I overuse the word stupid, but some of this stuff, it's just plain stupid. How could you even take a person seriously as an attorney when they say something like that? One of the reasons why he's alive today is that heaven's already full to capacity with the people who've been taken by law enforcement. And so somehow there wasn't enough room for him, so he couldn't die as a result of his wound. I mean, Lord help us. But this other part, heaven is full to capacity with the victims of law enforcement? Really? Well, first of all, I got news for him. Most of the victims of law enforcement are probably in hell. Yeah, that's right. I said it because it needs to be said. Most of the victims of law enforcement are probably in hell because they died doing dastardly things. They didn't die serving God and somehow were innocently taken out by an overzealous law enforcement. They were doing bad things, robbing, killing, stealing, fighting cops. So I don't think there's any danger of heaven being full to capacity with people who are engaged in that kind of behavior, number one. But number two, heaven has no limit to its capacity. God will take as many as want to come. The problem is not heaven's capacity. The problem is the capacity of people to want to go. You know, people blame God about sending folks to hell. I said, no, God's not sending people to hell. People are rushing headlong to get their ticket. Like they can't wait to get there. And God is standing in front of the doors of hell saying, please don't come here. Please don't. Please surrender to me. I've got wonderful things in store for you for all of eternity. Don't ignore my plea. Don't ignore my offer. And people are saying by the millions, the hundreds of millions, and the billions, no. They're saying, no, we will not have Jesus rule over us. Well, guess what? He's still King of Kings and Lord of Lords, whether they like it or not. Back in a moment.
It's my turn. Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
No one should be afraid to dream. No, I'm not talking about the kind that you have at night while you're sleeping. I'm talking about the kind you carry with you as you live, the visions you have. Indeed, every person should have some dreams of his own. Dreams help make life more enjoyable. Someone has stated that we should climb until our dreams come true. Of course, that is presupposing that we have dreams to climb toward. Most of us do. Those who don't should. Dreams will be as different as the people who have them. And why shouldn't they be? After all, they're personal. We do our own dreaming. No one else can ever do it for us. I'm a dreamer myself. I always have been. I hope I always will be. Some of my dreams seem unrealistic and impossible, but no matter how far removed they may seem, they're still possible as long as I continue to pursue them. Even if I never accomplish my dreams, they have been of value to me, for they've given me a goal to reach for and a desire to press toward that goal. They've helped me keep trying when defeat seemed ever so close and when I wanted to quit. You know, in one way, dreams aren't expensive. They don't cost any money. Even the poorest person in the world can have all the dreams he desires. But in another way, they are expensive. But we have to work and sacrifice to make our dreams come true. There just aren't many Prince Charmings around who will pop out of nowhere to make our dreams come true without any effort on our part. I believe this ability to dream, which we humans have, is one of God's great gifts to us. It has caused us to press on, to advance, to try to climb higher than we are. And in this respect, we are indeed indebted to God. Therefore, our dreams should be toward some goal that would make life richer for ourselves and, as well, for others. One thing I know for certain, God wants us to be somebody, to do something worthwhile. He never intended for a single one of us to be a nobody, to waste life. I hope you are a dreamer, and I want you to remember that your dreams don't have to include fame and fortune to be worthwhile. A woman who dreams of being the best mother has a very noble dream. A person who dreams of being kind and loving to other people has a dream worthy of pursuit. The world, and those of us in it, are greatly indebted to the dreamers. Their contributions to mankind can never be measured. So get captured by a great and worthy dream. Then pursue it. Pursue it with your whole self. Never stop pursuing it. Great and worthy dreams can come true. They have come true. And remember that everything began as a dream. As Carl Sandburg said, nothing happens unless first a dream. Well, dreams can come true, but even if they don't, life will be more rewarding for the person who dreams.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Well, look, I plan to spend more time, and so I'm going to spend a little time talking about the Republican National Convention last night because I think there's some highlights that are just absolutely wonderful. The number is 888-589-8840. I don't know how much of it you caught, but if you caught some of it and there's something that you want to highlight that you think is worth talking about, give me a call. I would love to have your reflection, too. We did have a law enforcement officer call yesterday and talk a little bit about this Jacob Blake shooting. But I'd be curious to know what others of you are thinking about it, having seen the video. You may have a different perspective on it than I do. As I said, I heard Trey Gowdy say, you know, he thought it was a bad shoot. I looked at it, and I thought it was a good shoot. So there's going to probably be differences of opinion until we get more evidence as to exactly what happened leading up to the incident. I think these police officers are the one involved in the shooting. He's probably done. His career is probably over because just the politics of it, regardless of the merits, I think the politics of it are simply going to stop him from continuing to serve. I hope I'm wrong about that, because if it's found to be a lawful shoot, he should not have his career destroyed over it. But here again, we ask these people to go do dangerous, difficult things, and then we punish them when, as inevitably will happen, things go wrong or someone is hurt. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I wish we did live in heaven right now. Don't get me wrong. Not trying to, not trying to push anybody there. But I wish this were heaven on earth. And there would, I mean, of course, there wouldn't be any need for police, would there? But as James Madison said, enlightened statesmen are not always at the helm. So we do need our law enforcement officers. But look, let me go on then to mention a couple of things. I thought that some of the things at the Republican National Convention last night were just tremendous. The naturalization ceremony, which is always moving. And, you know, they are now saying, I saw the New York Times headline, naturalization ceremony at the Republican National Convention contradicts the president's stance on immigration. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Or anybody else. Because none of us have a problem with legal immigration when people go through the proper process because they want to be Americans, really want to be Americans now. I'm not so sure that that applies to Ilhan Omar. I don't think she wanted to be an American so much as she just wanted to escape the dangers in Somalia. I don't think she has any more affection to this country for this country than you know somebody has for a rat. I really don't. I don't think this woman has any interest in this country whatsoever. But she is an American citizen legally, and so there's nothing we can do about that. She could voluntarily renounce her citizenship, and the way she talks about this country, I think she'd be doing us all a favor to do that. But that aside, the naturalization ceremony was absolutely beautiful. Seeing these people who wanted to be Americans sworn in, you know, having taken an oath to the Constitution of the United States, it's just a beautiful thing. And they're criticizing the president. You know, he used a Republican National Convention to perform his official duties. Yeah, you know how many folks showed up at the Democrat National Convention when Obama was running for re-election? So please, give me a break. Their hypocrisy knows no bounds. I thought the AG for Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, was excellent last night. I mean, he called Joe Biden out in a very pointed way because, you know, he quoted Joe Biden. He said, Vice President Biden has made a series of gaffes as it relates to African Americans, his term, not mine. I don't use that term, but I'm quoting him, and taking our vote for granted. We've seen that time and time again with some of the comments he made, whether it be telling folks, if you ain't voting for him, you ain't black, or the fact that he goes on to a show with a black journalist in the same context and mentions the word junkie. And quote, this is Cameron talking. Black folks are not monolithic in our thinking. We are the only group of individuals that are told we have to subscribe to one party, and that's the Democratic Party. I'm here to say enough is enough, and I know that there are millions of African Americans that look just like me that aren't in chains and have minds of their own to articulate their views and their values. Because, of course, Biden said, you know, the Hispanics aren't like the blacks. You know, they have a wide diversity of thought and opinion. I'm thinking, where do these people get this stuff? Well, we know that that's the way they'd like it to be. People like me, see, are outliers. You know, we're the crazy ones. Because they'd like it to be that all black people and anybody they adopt as a victim class, every single one of them, just like little hypnotized cult members, do exactly what they are told, think exactly what they are told, and say exactly what they are told. And here we are with people like the Attorney General of Kentucky and me, his name again, Daniel Cameron, and me, and many, 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 many others across the country who somehow didn't get the memo. But I thought, here again, I just thought that that was absolutely great. Oh, and folks, John Ponder, the guy arrested and sent to prison for armed robbery, who turned his life around, received Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. And look at this, folks, becomes best friends with the FBI agent who arrested him. I mean, you know, folks, you know, how can you not love America? You know, how can you not love a country like this? And they're best friends now. And John Ponder's made a life for himself, started a 501c3, and is helping other prisoners to turn their life around, other convicts to turn their life around. And do you know what the liberal media is saying? Well, since he runs a 501c3, he should not be at the Republican National Convention. And yeah, oh my goodness gracious! You want to start questioning every 501c3 that George Soros puts money into and does explicitly political things? John Ponder is a citizen of the United States of America. He has now been pardoned, which means that all of his voting rights, all of his Second Amendment rights are completely restored by none other than, thank you very much, President Donald J. Trump, because President Barack Obama certainly didn't do it. And this man is a free citizen who can voice any opinion he chooses about any matter he chooses. It's not his 501c3 that's doing it. It's him doing it. And you don't lose your citizenship rights when you start a 501c3. I tell you, folks, here again, it's a spiritual battle. The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Let's get to your calls. Thank you all for your patience. Let's go to Harold in Mississippi. Harold, welcome.
Good afternoon, Bishop Jackson. The awakening airs when I'm on my commute to work every day and blesses me every day. And I recently found a remedy for the negative effect of evil things taking place today. The first one is an analogy that a co-worker shared with me that came from the pulpit of Church of the King in Mandeville, Louisiana, Brother Steve Robinson. He said he heard it in a sermon. He says, unforgiveness is like drinking a bottle of poison and expecting it to hurt someone else. Yeah. And the other are three verses from Romans 12. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For doing so, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good.
Amen. Amen. Al, thank you so much for the call. That is the word of the Lord. And it doesn't get any better than that. No, indeed. Well, look, folks, the number is 888-589-8840. When we come back, we're going to continue to take your calls.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill. But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. Use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. And thanks.
You know our country needs prayer. Franklin Graham knows it too.
As I stand in our nation's capital, the only hope for America is God. And on the 26th of September, I'm holding a prayer march, and we're going to go from what's behind me, the Lincoln Memorial, all the way down to the Capitol, praying for our nation.
Make plans to join Franklin Graham September 26th in Washington, D.C. All the details for the prayer march are at billygraham.org. That's billygraham.org.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
And I just had dreams of being married one day, and I would have this knight in shining armor. And I remember at 10 years old looking into the bathroom mirror in our little blue bathroom and wondering where he was.
Today on Focus on the Family Minute, Juana Michaels reflects on how her childhood hopes affected the struggles she had in her marriage.
And then all those years later, I came up so empty. I thought it was Terry, but then I thought I'd made such a huge mistake. And then when I started going to church, I met with the pastor. And he said to me, Juana, and he read Matthew 6:33 to me, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. And he said, Juana, you're trying to make this decision about your marriage, but you're making the wrong decision. What you really need to decide is, what are you going to do with Christ?
Well, who you choose as a spouse is important, but how you bring Christ into your marriage is even more important. And you can hear more from Juana today at FamilyMinute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We're back, and let's come right to you all. Let's go to Kim in Texas. Kim, welcome.
Hi, good morning or good afternoon, Bishop John Jackson. I'm
good
so
morning, Kim.
Blessed to be.
Well, I guess it's
so
good afternoon, isn't it?
Able to get you on my radio. Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I just want to let you know, I do believe that you are absolutely anointed in the revelation knowledge that you share. I am so blessed to receive. I wanted to say that the difference between the Republican convention in comparison to the Democrat convention was just completely polar opposite. One was so negative and dark, and the Republican was so positive and uplifting for the goodness of this country and what it could be. And as far as the things that are happening in the news with the unfortunate injuries of people, you know, it seems in this country we've forgotten there is a cause and an effect. That while I can sympathize with somebody because they have suffered a horrible consequences, it does not mean that they did not bring this on themselves by the actions they choose to engage in.
Yeah, Kim, and nobody wants to talk about that. You know, when I have mentioned before that I've never had a bad experience with police officers, I've even been chided and told, well, you shouldn't say that because that, you know, that implies that it doesn't happen to others. I'm not implying it doesn't happen to others, but I think that my behavior has something to do with that. I mean, I think that the respect that I have for police officers has something to do with that. And I think the fact that I'm not out there in the streets doing anything bad, that people have to call the cops on me, not only now, but throughout my life, thank God, has had something to do with that. So you're right, Kim. But here again, that's not something anybody in the mainstream media or anybody I just haven't heard anybody willing to address it. They just don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Same was true with George Floyd. Apparently, you know, he was up to some no good stuff. And here again, doesn't justify what happened to him with a foot on his neck. But still, at what point are we going to say to people, look, don't do things that bring yourself into a confrontation with police. And if you find yourself in a situation like that, don't resist them. Don't fight them. Don't disrespect them. Just cooperate. I mean, how hard is that? But people seem to have a hard time saying it. Okay, let's go to Tom in Virginia. Tom, welcome.
Yes, Culpeper, Virginia.
All right, Culpeper, one of my favorite places.
Yeah. Hey, first of all, I love your program. I listen to it every day on the way to work. This is what gets me to work and just gets me going, man. But I got one proposition for you, Mr. Jackson.
Okay.
Would you please go and, it might be too late, but if you could get you a slot on the Republican National Convention and speak, I will buy your plane ticket.
Please, well, listen, please, Tom, man, that is... Huh?
We need you, man. We need you. We need the clarity and the truth of what you speak, and that would be a perfect forum for you to do it at. Do you agree?
Well, listen, I would love to have done that. I wasn't invited, Tom, and so this is the platform I've got right now. We'll see what else the Lord opens up for me. I don't think I'm going to be invited in the next 2 days to speak at the Republican National Convention. But listen, I'm flattered and honored that you think I could do a good job there. So thank you so much for the call, Tom. And thanks for listening. Oh, folks, I could tell you some stories about Culpeper County. I mean, Culpeper County is one of my favorite places. When I ran for lieutenant governor, a group of pilots adopted me, flew me all over the state at no cost, prayed for me every time I got in their airplanes, and just a wonderful, wonderful group of people and a wonderful group of citizens down there. It's just a great place. So thanks for the call, Tom. Let's go to Sue in North Carolina. Sue in North Carolina. Welcome, Sue.
Hi, I'm calling about the shooting.
Yes.
Okay, this is my opinion on the entire thing. I don't say this is for the police. However, there are other measures that you can take. Somebody's walking away from you. You could tase him. There are other things that you can do to stop him. Why does it have to be a gunshot? Why is it every time that somebody has to die?
Well, first of all, Sue, remember, it's not sometimes somebody always has to die. You have to remember, the last time I looked at Bureau of Justice statistics, 2.6 million black Americans are arrested every single year. About 6 million white Americans or Americans who aren't black are arrested every single year. So that means with all those arrests taking place, a very, very infinitesimal number end up in an encounter that turns violent with the police. And then a small number of those end up getting killed. So the fact that the mainstream media portrays it this way it's not the truth. It's not what's really happening. It's not in the real world. But of course, when you see this stuff on television, it looks like, oh, that's happening every minute. You know, some black person's being shot. But the fact of the matter is millions are in, and that doesn't include, by the way, all the people stopped on the road for driving infractions and that sort of thing. I'm just talking about actual arrests of black folks. Very, 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 very few of them end up in violence or harm to the person who's being arrested. Here's the second thing I would say. Look, what you're doing is to me the classic mistake, which is you're not there. You don't have to make the split decision. You don't have to deal with what the potential danger is, but the police officer should have done something different. If this guy is reaching into his car for a gun or he's reaching into his car for a knife, as I've explained before, this stuff happens not in a matter of 5 minutes. You don't, well, officer, I'm about to stab you or shoot you. Give me 5 minutes here and you get yourself together. I mean, these things happen in 1 or 2 or 3 seconds. And so I don't think any police officer ever gets up in the morning and says, well, I can't wait to shoot somebody today. I think in that moment, they do what they think they need to do in order to save their lives and potentially the lives of others. So that's all I can say to that, Sue. And look, we need to get more facts and more information about this, but I just want you to give you that number. Almost 3 million black people arrested every year, twice that number of whites arrested every year. And only the last year in 2019, 9 black folks were killed in which there was some question because of the apparent, you know, the person wasn't armed and this sort of thing. So that's an infinitesimal number compared to all the interactions that black Americans have with police officers. And that, by the way, that includes high crime areas like the inner city, where most arrests are taking place without anybody being hurt. So, you know, I would just say, Sue, keep it in perspective, okay? Don't let the media convince you that this is some kind of epidemic and that every time police interact with a black person, the black person ends up dead, because that's the way they portray it. But thank you for the call, Sue. We appreciate it. Let's go to Tony in Alabama. Tony, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. You?
Hello. How
yes, can you hear me?
I'm just going to comment on a few things. Yes, I could. I'm just
go ahead. Go right
on
ahead.
A few things that I heard. I'm going to comment on the shooting. I just think we need to get more training out, because when a subject is walking away from an officer, he should right then to me detain him. But when he let him walk so far, to me, that's when it got to a danger, because you cannot let them get into their car because you don't know what's going to happen on that.
I think that's it. Tony, I think that's a valid point. There again, that's something else in training that maybe you could tell an officer, you know, once a subject starts to move away from you, you know, stop them then. But you have to remember now, if a person is resisting and you stop them then, there's also always the danger that that will become a tussle in which your gun then potentially ends up in the hands of that person. So I think you make a valid point. I'm just pointing out that these things are not simple. But go ahead, Tony. Something else you were going to say?
Yes, and I am a slight Democratic Republic person, and I thank God for God. I'm a blessed. I am anointed. I do believe I know it. And I do have my own mind about this, and I am voting Republican. I am. I'm looking at what a person have done in their life span and what they're doing now. And I look at where we are now today. We're in a better situation, even though the COVID came and knocked a lot of things down. It does not mean that God have not put that there just to see how we're going to balance. We are still going to bounce back. And amen. I am voting for Donald Trump. I am a Republican that listens to his record. And I am a little loner on a tree by myself. I do have to defend what I believe in. And it's okay, because I'm a powerful person. I know how to speak. And I stand for God. And I stand
that,
for myself.
Tony, from your comments on this radio program, it's obvious that you are a powerful person who knows how to speak. So, Tony, thank you so much for the call. And look, here again, I think Tony's made a very valid point. That's why I say, rather than putting these officers in prison and prosecuting them, if you think, okay, there was potentially a better way to handle that, you know, you look at that and you give them additional training, but you don't second guess and treat them like a criminal because they made the best judgment they thought they could make under the circumstances. So I appreciate Tony's point. Folks, that's going to do it for today. I wish I could get all of you in, but please call back again tomorrow. There's plenty more to talk about, I can tell you that. And look, you know, we're going to get through these problems. We are. You know, my vision, by the way, for America is for a time to come. When Herschel Walker spoke, he said he'd known Donald Trump for 37 years. And, you know, I thought about that and said, I guarantee you not once did he think, I know a white guy for a long time. This is just his friend. Just his friend. And I look forward to a day when we just see each other just as people, as human beings, and we can be friends and fellow Americans and work together and make our country the very best it can be, rather than the mayhem that we're seeing right now. It'll end. And in the meantime, remember, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.